The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everybody. This is BL Allison talking. The picture that you see is actually Eva Smith. She'll be doing most of the presentation today. But I wanted to say hi to you. Both of us will be working together as a team on this new series that we're doing. Okay. It's a new series to a lot of you. It's not a new series. It's a redo of one that we had several years ago, but it is going to take interaction with all of the students. Students will be doing their own charts 4 or 5 webinars from now. And so, something different comes up every single time. So it's always good to repeat it if you want to get a refresh on esoteric astrology. I would like to cover just a couple of things before I turn it over to Eva. A lot of you are new to the webinars, and so I just want to make sure you understand some of the systems that we have. I can tell from looking at your names and everything that you all are on mic. You all are on mic, so you're good to go with this. We will keep you muted, but you'll be able to raise your hand and type comments and everything, okay? We keep you muted because there can be sounds that you don't realize are coming through your mic or echoes or anything like that. And that's the reason that we keep you muted. We're not trying to be mean or anything. We're just trying to get the best noise quality that we can have. Okay. You can mute and unmute yourself right here with your little microphone. Or this little microphone here, either one, you just touch it and it toggles back and forth. When you're muted, it's going to be red with a slash through it. When you're open, it's going to be green like this. Same with the hands. Raise your hand if you have a question. If we're in the middle of something, it may take us a minute to call on you. And when we do, we will unmute you. I want you to know there's been a lot of confusion with the arrows. The arrow points in the direction that's available to you. So a green up arrow like this one right here means that your hand is down and you have the capability to put it up. A red down arrow like this one over here means that your hand is already up. So you can monitor that yourself, and it's on the same dashboard right here. Here's your mic, and here's your hand. And like I said, it will toggle back and forth between the two, just as your microphone will. And then the last thing I want to tell you is that you have two options to type us questions. You can use the question block, which most people do. If there is a plus there and you don't see where you type, then what you need to do is click that plus sign and it will open up the block for you, and then you just type. Okay, there's also the chat box down here, and you do the same thing. So both of those avenues are available to you to type us questions, especially if you have some kind of a problem you can't hear, or something like that. Let us know, and we'll try and work while Eva's doing her presentation. We can try and help you troubleshoot in the background, okay? So that's all I really have to tell you right now about the webinar and the protocols and how to use your dashboard and everything. So Eva, over to you.
Okay, so now, we need to exchange screens, correct?
I'm going to make you the presenter.
Perfect. So while this is being done, I want to say hello to everybody. Show my screen. Here we go. Almost, I think. So now what?
You need to make that small. Minimize that, because that's...
Minimize that. Okay.
And
I see. Yeah. Okay, let me just... Let me minimize that.
Or close
and,
it.
or close it. And let me close this, and let me go to this. Okay, I'm almost there. I want to just tell people that they're going to only see my face for a few moments. I'm going to disappear so that they can see the screen a lot better, and then I'll go out of it. Just let me concentrate here. Now, am I still visible to you guys? Because you're not visible to me. I'm not visible to me.
Yes.
Okay, so I want to say hi to you all. I hope you're all in there. I want to welcome you, and I want to say goodbye as far as my face is concerned. So here I disappear. Just tell me if I did this correctly. Let me see. Okay, did that work?
Yes.
It worked. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, so now, there we go. So you're seeing one thing, right? And you're just seeing the solar system.
Yes.
Right. Thank you. Okay. So we're beginning. So as you can see that the sun way, way out there has all these planets in its system, in its sphere of influence. They don't all, as you know, have the same orbit, but this particular depiction shows them all lined up in a row. You can see that there is these broken up rocks or stones separating Jupiter, the huge, huge, huge planet, from Mars, the red planet. And that is to indicate where our personal planets end. The personal planets end where these rocks are. Then you have the intermediate ones would be Jupiter and Saturn. Saturn is the one with the rings around it. And then you have the transpersonal planets. So our solar system is set up in such a way that we can access all these wonderful planets. We'll go into more specifics as we move along. But as an introduction, what is esoteric astrology? So in my notes here, I say that it looks at causes rather than effects. What does that even mean, causes versus effects? It's the underlying behind everything that we see. The effects are what we see. The causes we don't always know. And so it is that which lies behind and under, and that's why the word esoteric or the word occult, which is that which is hidden, that which we don't see, that's what is not in front of our faces. So that gives you an overall idea of the word esoteric in front of the word astrology. So regular astrology, whether we call it regular, whether we call it orthodox or exo, outer, all deal with our personality, their personal astrology. And it goes anywhere from the mundane, psychological astrology, and that's taken off, actually. That's pretty good stuff, the psychological astrology. It also does not deal with fortune telling, and regular astrology deals with everyday life. And the everyday situations. So many regular astrology will tell you when is a good time to buy a house, when is a good time to get married, to have a baby. This is not esoteric astrology. We don't do that. I remember when I first got into doing all these charts, I used to get all these requests to do, I guess, mundane or orthodox or regular astrology, and they would ask me these things, and I realized it is not where my focus was. And so I would then refer other people to them, because my interest is in dealing with the consciousness aspect. The consciousness is the awareness aspect. It is the soul. It is the part of us that is the evolving part and the aware part, the witnessing part. And the very last sentence on this chart tells you the purpose of esoteric astrology is to integrate the soul into the personality so that we can fulfill our purpose. Sounds good, right? Easy. As a matter of fact, many advanced souls do not respond well to traditional or exoteric astrology readings. I know a lot of people who are fairly well along the path, and they will read a prediction in a newspaper or a magazine, and they'll say, this is the stupidest thing. It doesn't even apply to me. Because that kind of astrology deals with people's everyday life, with the romance. That's not dealing with what lies behind. That's not dealing with truly the consciousness aspect. We are not fated victims of our horoscope, even though we've elected to work off karma or to learn certain lessons. So people think that that's it. Just because we have this particular horoscope, it becomes our destiny. It really is not necessarily so. We always have a choice. We can always choose. We can become conscious co-creators by the choices we make. Hierarchy always says we never know what humanity is going to choose to do. All that hierarchy can do, those are the elder brothers who guide the race, is impulse us with opportunities and information and guidance, but they never, never know what humanity will choose. Same thing with ourselves. So another thing here that it tells us is that esoteric astrology gives us a larger perspective of life. And we learn that we're not just little people on a planet inhabiting this planet, but that there's a whole life connected to our system and our planet. We'll go into that in a minute. Yeah, right there it is. Our solar system is a living being. Think about that. It's a life, it's an entity. And all the planets, all the asteroids, all the comets, everything out there is part of a living, pulsating life, much greater than even our solar system. And by the way, we will have opportunities for questions here. So later on, I'll open it up for any questions and then we'll move on to another part of the presentation. So, esoteric astrology has been called the science of all sciences. And so obviously DK feels that it is vital for us to understand because it is the paramount science of all sciences. I mean, imagine. It tells us that it is a system of relating one thing to another. Everything is related. Have we thought of that? What is related? Not just humans to humans, but there are energies related planet to planet, system to system, ray to array. There's resonance. We all relate constantly. And as we learn more and more about that, we can help within our own growth and we can help understand where we are within the larger scheme of things. It gives us greater comprehension, greater understanding. So astrology, as we know, is extremely old. It's one of the old and ancient studies. And the elders used to only be able to see up to a certain point when they looked out in the heavens. From the naked eye, they could see as far as Saturn. Saturn was the boundary. Remember the original picture I had up here where Saturn was? It didn't have any of the transpersonal planets that the eye could see. And maybe the eye still can't see that without the telescope. And hence, Saturn became Jehovah or the God of the Jews. And as we know, the Old Testament is full of retribution, difficulties, loads that people had to deal with. And many times Saturn is looked at as malevolent because of the retribution and what it wants us to do, the lessons that it gives us, the disciplines that it gives us. But we will learn that Saturn really is the disciple's friend. Now, on this page, you will also see where some of these transpersonal planets and were discovered and when they were discovered. And the interesting thing to note about this is that we only discover once we have the consciousness to be able to deal with the energies of a particular planet. So, for example, Uranus was discovered in the 1700s. And then in the 1800s, it was Neptune that was discovered. So hence humanity, the scientists were able to put together the knowledge to create ether and anesthetics. It's a Ray 6 quality component. And Neptune also conveys Ray 6. Uranus is more a seventh ray, first ray. It's about revolutions. It's about changing the order of things, creating the new out of the old. And Pluto was discovered in 1930. And Pluto is first ray energy. Many of you may not know your rays yet, so that's okay. Eventually you will as you move through the our school. But I wouldn't be fair to you if I didn't talk about rays as well. So what is first ray? First ray is also known for death and destruction and annihilation. And we know that once Pluto was discovered, we also started to work with munitions, with warfare, with death, as in bombs and things like that. Okay, I have a wonderful quote here. This is from Esoteric Astrology. It's early on in the book, it's on page 7. And if we were sitting together, I would have one of you read it. But since we're not, I'm going to read it. So space is an entity. It means it's alive. The entire vault of heaven is the phenomenal appearance of that entity. In him, we live and move and have our being. It is the life. It is with the life of this entity and with the forces and energies, the impulses and the rhythms, the cycles and the times and seasons that esoteric astrology deals. So it's vast, it's huge, the vault of our space. And one of the things that I learned a long time ago is space is not empty. Space is alive. I mean, imagine, space is alive. We look at empty space, space between you and me, between you and another being, and all of that is living energy. I mean, that blew my mind when I first really, really took that in. So the source of this new information is Alice Bailey, and she acted as an amanuensis for the Tibetan, and 24 books were written during the periods of 1919 to 1949. And for those of you who do not know DK, he is really the true author of all of most of the books. He is known as the Master Joel Kuhl. At the time, he may have been in incarnation. Now he's out of incarnation, but he was able to work with Alice Bailey in a telepathic way. So she hand wrote everything that she received telepathically. She was not a channel, and she did not step out of the way and allow him to work through her. It was a telepathic communication. The beauty of these books that were written by Alice Bailey is that they were written for a Western mind, which thinks and works differently than an Eastern traditional mind. One last thing here before I move on is when reading charts, the ideal is to integrate both the esoteric approach and the exoteric. So I know that when I first started into astrology somewhat 40 some years ago, once I realized that there was the esoteric, I almost threw away the exoteric, the traditional, and nor was I really educated in the traditional. I had to go out and seek traditional knowledge so that I realized I could integrate the two, and it made a lot more sense to me. So for me personally, that was going the cart before the horse, the cart before the horse. So why are we here? So we're here to grow, to evolve, and to learn our lessons and become the best that we can be. When you die, you all know this already, you take nothing with you except your expanded consciousness, so that the next time around, you pick up the threads of where you left off. Life is a continuum. And we are born with innate qualities through past experiences. So everything that you do, everything that you learn, it's really not thrown out. Somewhere in there, it is maintained, and you come into another incarnation with all these past experiences, these treasures that you've learned from your life. I mean, we all know the story. You can have two children born in the same family with the same upbringing, and each one of them will display different innate qualities, because you are the sum total of everything you've ever been. So astrology impacts you from the outside in, whereas the rays are from the inside out. The combination of the two, rays and astrology, make up all the energies and forces of how you move in the life. A zodiac comes from the Greek word, which is a circle of animals. And this zodiac circumscribes, that is, it goes around our solar system. Each one of these signs or constellations is made up of a minimum of two or more stars. A star is a sun. Our sun that has all these planets revolving around it is a star. Not all stars have a system like ours. Some of them are just suns without having a system. So here's a zodiac. And this particular zodiac is intimately connected with our human evolution. We are told that the zodiac is made up of living beings, whether you call them angelic beings or deva beings. They focus the energy and they pour this energy from the constellation, from the zodiac, into our system via the sun. This picture actually is not a very good picture. It shows the earth in the middle. It really should be the sun. So this next one, just imagine that it's the sun in the center, not the earth, gives you a slightly larger map. We have the three aspects of deity for our system, which is made up of the first aspect being the Great Bear, the second aspect being the system Sirius, and the third being the Pleiades. Each of them is are very important energies. And out of these three, they then stream more into the constellations themselves, because each constellation conveys rays. Each constellation, just like each human being, is made up of a monadic ray, a soul ray, a personality ray. So we are just given the most important energy conveyed by the planets that rule the signs, and it's just then the personality ray. It's the most obvious ray, and I have them here depicted, and they are depicted as the sacred planets. What does it mean to be sacred versus to be non-sacred? It just means more evolved. Now, the sun and the moon are really not planets. They are there as veils. Veils meaning they hide a planet that would be considered that lies behind the outer face. I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody, but just accept it as it is and we'll move on. Okay, so what I've done here is I wanted to show you in perspective the globes of the various planets. So you can see the sizes, globes. What is a globe? A globe is an outer manifestation of a living entity. So when you look at a globe, whether it's the Earth, whether it's Venus, all you're seeing is the personality. No difference than when I look at you and I see your physical form, I see the form, and out of that form streams also the personality. But the form is actually the physical etheric form. And I really should back up here and say it's really not the personality we're seeing. We're seeing the physical etheric form of the particular planets. There's a lot more to just seeing the form. Look at the size of Jupiter in comparison to the Earth, which is... I can use my cursor right here. See the Earth? Look at the size Jupiter. It is the largest planet in our system. Hence, if it's in any way affecting you, there's going to be something about largesse, something about huge, something about a lot of, because look at the size. It can't help but impact because it's so big. Anyway, there's Pluto. Look at the size of Pluto in comparison to Jupiter. And then our sun. Our sun is like the nucleus that holds together an atom. The sun is the center of the atom, which is the solar system. And all of these planets move like neutrons and although I'm not good in this, and it's not physics, but they move around this central nucleus. So this sun holds in its sphere of consciousness, all the planets revolving around it. It's the boss, just like you, the entity that occupies your form, has a lot more to it than just the form. There is the thinking ability, there's the feeling, there's the soul, and so on. Horo, from the horoscope, is the hour. And the scope is to view. So we want to view the hour that we were born in. So we need to know the time, the place, and the date of our birth. And the natal chart is known as a blueprint or a snapshot in time of our incarnation. It is the soul that decides what we need to learn in this lifetime, in this incarnation. So I'm sure a lot of you who have read things on karma and reincarnation know a lot of this, but we're just reiterating it so that we're all starting from the same understanding. Each one of us chooses the family to be born into, the time, the place. Yes, there are accidents. Yes, there are inducements, but it's still the time you were born. It's still the place where you were born. And we choose the characteristics, the circumstances, the challenges, the abilities, and all the powers that are going to influence us. However, remember, there's still always a choice. Every step of the way we choose via free will. And it's only through those circumstances that we grow and that we learn. So it says that it's the soul that decides the exact time that you need to be born in. And for those of you who are truly interested in wanting to understand astrology, I would suggest, if you don't know your time, is to do some investigating. Check with your parents or those that are alive. And I've always told people, quiz them. Ask them if it was day or if it was night, who was present. Try to get as close a time as possible to the exact time that you can. Some hospitals also keep records for a certain number of years. So the soul decides what treasures or abilities you need to employ, mostly, and what qualities you need to cultivate. And all of that is available to you and understanding your chart. So before we go on to the three most important luminaries, I'm going to open up the floor for some questions. Are there any questions before I move on?
I don't see any hands yet, but I'm sure minds are working.
Yeah, because I didn't give them a chance to
right.
do that yet.
Nope, still
Well,
none.
Give it another few minutes, and then if not, that's fine.
I do want to say about the rising sign, about the ascendant, you know, it really is important to have that exact birth time. And as much as we do ask questions, a lot of times people don't remember. And I had someone submit a, you know, ask me to do a chart, and they were off by an hour, and it changed their ascendant sign. I think it's every 2 hours.
Every 2 hours, that's right.
It will change. But, you know, if you're at the later degrees, that could give you a whole new ascendant. And the ascendant is the one, well, I don't want to steal your thunder, but it marks the rest of the houses and everything in a chart. So it's very important, not only from an exoteric or from an esoteric standpoint, which Eva's going to talk about, but also from the exoteric standpoint too. So that time is really important.
Okay, so I'm assuming there are no really burning questions at this time.
I do not see any hands. I do not see any questions.
And okay, so from that I conclude, group, that you all get everything that I've said, and it doesn't stimulate anything, which is just perfectly fine. We move on. Okay, so the rising sign or the ascendant, they're synonymous words, and It is determined by the exact time of birth. It is the first breath, representing that incarnation of the soul. And it, like BL said, because there are 24 hours in a day and there are 12 signs, every 2 hours, the time, or rather the exact time will represent what is rising there on the horizon. It changes every 2 hours. So if you're near the end or near the beginning of when those 2 hours start, then it's important to know the exact time. Well, it's always important to know. Degrees are affected, relationships and degrees are all affected within the sign. So anyway, we want to understand that the soul comes before the personality. Therefore, the rising sign comes first, and hence it's important. It represents the clue to the life and to the life achievement. I don't know if we get this. The highest expression of the rising sign is the highest quality that the soul can potentially unfold in any lifetime. The rising sign is not the soul. And so many people will look at whatever sign is on the horizon or rising. I'll say, well, that's my soul. No, it's not the soul. What it is, it's the method by which the soul will work out its purpose. It's a mouthful. So I'm going to say it again. The rising sign is the method by which the soul works out its purpose. So this becomes the stretch in the life. This is what it pushes out to stretch to the highest qualities of that rising sign. And then we need to incorporate that into our personality sign, which is the sun sign. The rising sign sometimes, every sign has its strengths and has its weaknesses. And many times we appropriate some of the weaknesses. So it looks like it could be weaknesses of a personality, even though it's coming from the rising sign. But it's the highest quality of the rising sign that we really need to try to bring into ourselves and to work with. So three luminaries is what we will always be focusing on as we do the charts with all of you. And the three are the rising sign, then the sun sign, which is the personality, and then we'll work on the moon. So what is the sun sign? It's the face we wear out in the world. In other words, this is what people see. This is the impressions that you give. This is the energy that you put out. It's so easy to be your personality, because that's what we identify with. And so once we know some of the characteristics of our sun sign, we also recognize some of the strengths and some of the weaknesses. When we know what the weaknesses are, that's when we can usually try to spiral up the weaknesses so that they become a strength. If you don't know what you're dealing with, it's hard to have those tools. So the sun is also how we center ourselves and what brings solidity and stability into our lives. It's how we engage as well as what we avoid. And it's a very important part of who we are, because the soul needs the personality. The soul can only express through the personality. So it's very important to know the personality. Many times we will say to people, they really need to step into the personality self. Get to really know who you are. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What do you need to work on? And the goal always is to shine like the sun in the sky, to be the best that we can be. And you can do that by incorporating the strengths of the personality as well as the strengths and the highest qualities of your ascendant. Then you're really, really working. You're really, really ticking. The moon. The moon is known as lunar. It's the lunar qualities within us. And it's the traits that we need to fully understand. Why? Because they are unconscious tendencies. We're not even aware of them. They are the habits of the past. It's the things that we all know well. And if you know something well, you do it without thinking. The way we react, when we react, we don't think. It's a reaction, you know, it's an action, and we don't think. And generally we react from a lunar place. We react with those instincts that are so habitual and so unconscious, we're not even aware of them. Therefore, they are the lines of least resistance. And what do we mean? Many people don't understand that expression, the lines of least resistance. You do not resist those natural tendencies. That's what we mean. You don't resist them. They come so naturally. So because they're hidden, we need to find ways to outgrow those tendencies. And how do we do that? Through greater awareness. It's only through awareness that we bring about change, only through awareness. One of the things that I like to say is that we don't want to energize our lunar qualities. They're pretty strong on their own. They don't move us forward. We know how to do that. We know how to do that well. For example, down here, the very last sentence, the moon in the heavens is a dead body. It's a dead body. There's no living entity there anymore. It has withdrawn its life. And just like a human body, when the soul has withdrawn itself from the human body, it starts to decay. It starts to lose any kind of animation. It's the same with the moon. The moon has no life of its own. All it does is it acts as a reflective plate of the sun. So that's not an area we need to energize within ourselves, all the moon and lunar qualities. What it does have, it has the natural movement that is still within matter, but no entity per se that habituates it within the moon. Okay, now I'm just very, very cursorily going to cover this because I make reference to this, but this is not the intention here to go into this deeply. BL and I will go over a lot of this material when we are working together in the next series, when we go through, after we've gone through all the signs. As a matter of fact, I should tell you what our plan is. We want to go through the signs and planets. After we've done that, we'll do some more deeper study of astrology to help you work with your own charts. Once you have an idea of how to work with your charts and you can recognize the qualities of your sun, moon, and ascendant, you send in your prospectus on that to BL. She works with you, and then you have the opportunity to do a webinar with us where you actually talk about your chart and we help you with that. So it's a pretty awesome experience. And those of you that have done it with us in the past, the feedback we got was pretty good, that everybody loved it. They learned a lot. So we invite you to hang in there. If this is so new to you, just be with us and it'll all fall into place.
Eva.
So,
before,
yes.
I'm sorry, before you move on, Michael has his hand up.
Okay, so are you going to unmute Michael for me?
Yes. Go ahead, Michael.
Please.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Eva. Hi, Michael.
And Sheldon and Helena say hi from the previous webinar that I dropped.
Oh, thank you.
Anyway,
is that it?
It's important to be traditional. Yeah, I'm experiencing network connection difficulties from time
okay.
to time. But it's important to, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. It's important to recognize the distinction between traditional astrology and esoteric astrology in these three luminaries. For instance, in the textbooks that Alan Leo put together in the early 20th century, he calls the ascendant, the body, the sun, the individuality, and the moon, the personality.
Mm-hmm. So we want to help people get out of those confusing terms.
Absolutely.
Well, and part of that has to deal with traditional astrology, because the exoteric purpose of the ascendant is the body. It's the physical person that we show to the world. So, Alan Leo was a very good esoteric astrologer, but he did use a little different terms, but they are the same terms that DK uses. When he talks about the sun being the individuality, he's talking about that Leo individuality that you have to have. You have to find yourself before you can find the soul. So I just want to say that there's a lot of terminology that's used, and we just have to learn the proper way to relate those terms together.
Right. And one of the things that as we move through the Maurya Federation is that there are many, many words that say the same thing. So just hanging on to something you just said, BL, as long as we understand that it's not a contradiction, it's just a different way of expressing those words. But thank you, Michael.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so there are 12 signs, and if we divide 12 by 3, we end up with 4. If we divide 12 by 4, we end up th with threes. So there's triplicities and there's quadriplies, not quadrip, whatever, the quads. And the quads form crosses. And so hence there are four signs on each cross. There are three sets of crosses that form, that have four signs on each cross. And all we want to do in this very, very cursory overview here is to just give you a little taste of what each cross is about. They're also known as modes. And the cardinal cross, I've pictured it as red, and I think of a cardinal in a church. He's the head of something, and he usually can wear red robes. It speaks to an independence. It speaks to a certain kind of control and drive, action, its beginnings, control over their environment. So just to get a sense of what that is. And I am not going to stay on this very long. We have Aries on one side and its opposite being Libra. We have Cancer at the bottom of that circle and its opposite being Capricorn. So those are the cardinal signs. Then we move to the fixed cross. Again, we have four signs. And fixity, just by the word itself, has to do with something that's hard to move. It's almost immovable if you become very fixed. So the words stability come in, the words maintenance, steadfastness, durability, holding on to something and not being able to let go. What is it that we hold on to? Well, we could be very cautious, afraid to move forward, conservative, you hold on to the past. So all those qualities of holding on, of being stable, of maintaining, all fit into the cardinal signs. And we'll start off with Taurus. As to my it's on the left side near the bottom, its opposite being Scorpio. Then we go back to the bottom being Leo, and its opposite being Aquarius. The last of the crosses is the mutable. And again, we look at the word mutable. What does the word mutable mean? It's something is flexible, it's adaptable, it can mutate, and therefore it can change. It is the total opposite of fixity. So all the signs associated with the mutable cross have these qualities in common. So there is the changeability, the adaptability, the versatility. So without going into too much, you just hang on to the words that are used to describe, and you get a sense of the way the energy within those crosses are. Okay, so elements. There are four elements. Earth tends to be solid, right? So when we speak of the earth, we speak of something that's solid. When we speak of water, Water, you know, is liquid. Speak of air, it's gaseous, and fire is energy. So oftentimes, earth represents the form. That's the part of us that's solid. Water, the liquid part, represents our emotions, our feeling nature. The air, which is gaseous, represents our mental capacity, our minds. And the fire represents the energy that we use as we move through life. Oftentimes, a lot of fire signs give someone a lot of confidence. If we were to go into a lot of this, we would know fire can burn, but fire can also warm. So fire can be very spontaneous and electrifying. Air means, you know, a lot of things go through the mind before they're necessarily landing in other parts of the body, and so on. We separate these elements into basically two groups, one being masculine. Masculine is more outgoing. It's more, the energy moves out, and that we have with fire and air. And then the feminine are the receptive energies, passive and receptive, which would be water and earth. You know, we drop things into the water. Things get buried into the water. The earth is the receiver of everything, right? And so hence it receives. So it kind of makes sense. And that's just the way we want to think about them. Okay, I have all kinds of stuff here about that, but we will get into a lot of this later. I don't want to take up too much time because this is just an intro. We talk a little bit here about the earth and what each one represents, which we're not doing. Okay. Any questions before we move on to the actual signs? And I know I went through that so quickly, but you're not going to be tested on it.
Well, yeah, actually, they are going to be tested on it.
No, well, I don't mean today.
What I wanted to remind you of that I think the students will appreciate knowing is that we will take the slides and create a PDF of the slides. So you guys will, and we're also making recordings of this. So you guys will be able to go back and rewatch it if you would like to. And you will also see the slides. So, you know, you don't need to take crib notes right now and madly work through that. So.
Oh, that is so important. Thank you, BL. Do not be writing. Just be listening and giving your attention here, because all of this material is going to be available to you. So don't do that.
Okay.
I wish I had.
Oh, I'm sorry.
More?
Go ahead. Diana had a question, but go ahead and finish your.
No. I was going to start on this. So let's Diana go.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, please, Diana.
Is my speaker? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, good. How do the negative qualities of the ascendant and the sun signs differ from the lunar qualities? In other words, lunar qualities, I understand it, we don't want to mess with them. They're not necessarily that helpful to us. But how do those lunar qualities differ from the sun sign and the ascendant signs' negative qualities? Because those, they have kind of positive and negative too, don't they?
Okay, so I'm just wanting to clarify a couple of ways in which we want to see this. Positive and negative with respect to the the slides I just had before here. Let's just go back to it. Here, positive and negative just have to do with the way in which the energy moves, right? A masculine would be fire and air. Those energies are the odd numbers in the sign. They are self-expressive. They're active. They're yang energy. Whereas the negative, the feminine, is passive and receptive. So that's one way of looking at positive and negative, right? As opposed to that would be masculine and feminine. Now let's go to the question that I think you're asking me, if I'm understanding you correctly, is the lunar, it's not that we want to not know them. It's important to know them because they are there and they have been honed over many incarnations. So they are characteristics that are part of who we are. It is important to know what they are so that when we express them, when we use them, we would have the ability to observe, oh, this is my moon, that my moon energy or my moon qualities that I'm using right now. Doesn't make it bad. It doesn't make it good. It's just an is. So that's one thing about the lunar qualities. Now let's go to the signs. The signs all have energies. They all have expressions and modes of expression. When we appropriate the energies from a sign, it goes through our system, through our filters. And based on how we are and who we are, we would appropriate energies in a particular way. Let's say I have exactly the same sun sign as someone else. Does that mean that I would express those sun signs exactly the same as the person beside me? No, because it goes through my filters, and what is a positive for me, the other person has inculcated it and brought it into their system, and it ends up being what we call a negative or a weakness. I don't even like the word positive and negative there. I like to use the word strengths and weaknesses. So an energy just is, and how we use it will determine whether or not it becomes a strength, or that same energy is a weakness. It's just like I said with fire. Fire is not good and it's not bad. It's not a positive, it's not a negative. How it is used will determine whether it's a strength or whether it's a weakness. If fire is used to warm, to cook, to heat your home, we think of it as positive. We think of it, this is pretty good. But if fire burns you and burns down your home and just causes destruction, then it becomes a negative. So, or a weakness. So it doesn't matter whether it's sun or whether it's ascendant or whether it's the moon. Every one of those luminaries has characteristics, has energy. How we use them will determine whether or not we are using them as strengths or whether we are using them as weaknesses. Have I addressed your question, Diana?
Yes, thank you very much.
Good, I'm glad. Okay, so I understood that. Okay. All right. Nothing else there for me, BL? No.
Okay. No.
So if we had a whiteboard and I could draw this for you, I would draw the signs for you or the glyphs, because the glyphs say so much to us about the quality of a particular sign. Now, before I do that, I just want to mention that some people think of the zodiac as being animals. And yes, there are different symbolic animals associated with every sign, except for the air signs. It's interesting. The air signs haven't got any animals. They have humans. Because we, in this root race, in this cycle of time, are meant to use our minds. We as humans are meant to use our minds. Hence, none of the air or the mind signs have animals. Okay, so that's an aside. Now let's look at the actual first sign here, which is Aries. And if you can look at this glyph right here, you can all see my cursor, right? And you see the horns of the ram, basically. But this particular depiction gives away what I would have you guess at if I was drawing that, and that is that it's a springing forth fountain, right? It comes up and shoots out. Well, that's the energy of Aries. It comes up and shoots out. It's exactly how Aries works. Aries is the very first sign of the zodiac, so it has something to do with first, with beginnings, with starting something anew, with being pioneering. And in order to shoot out, it has to be forceful. So there's something forceful about it, something that's independent about this energy. If you know the rays, what ray would you guess I'm talking about here? I can hear you. You're all saying ray one, correct? Yes, ray one, because it's the first, it's the closest to deity of all the signs, because it's number one. It's the first one. So it is said that the will aspect of Aries is the one that is the strongest of all the will aspects. And will is usually associated with the first aspect of deity, will and power. Now, it's fire. And by now, fire, as you know, is very active. You know, fire, you can't really subdue fire. It's active. It stimulates. It can be destructive. It can be impatient, right? Now, one of the things that we don't stress enough as astrologers is the opposite. The opposite, DK tells us it is such an important part of astrology and to incorporate the opposite. And I have to be honest with you, it's something that is hard for us to do somehow. We know that we should, and we talk about it, but we don't really incorporate it, I think, in the way that DK would like us to do. In this particular depiction, this particular drawing, you have the opposite right here. It's Libra. And you can see the glyph here for Libra. So this artist actually does have the opposite right there. But I'm not going to talk about it because I don't want to confuse. So we're going to move on. We're going to move on to look at Aries in different ways. This gives you an idea of how the springing forth, the power that is associated with being the first, just like that fountain. It's the closest to deity. You got that over here. And the first ray is a very strong ray. And usually the ray that is given to us by the Tibetan, the very first ray that he offers us is usually the personality ray. The second ray, and not all the signs are given three rays being the monadic ray, the soul ray, and the personality ray. In the astrology, it would be the reverse. The first thing we are given is the personality ray. The next thing, if we're given another ray, would be the soul ray. And if we're given a third ray, it would be the monadic ray. But seldom is that done. Some signs are only, we are only told one ray, which would then be the personality ray. In Aries' case, we are told that also Aries has the ray seven. So ray seven is the ray of construction, of inventing and building. Hence, I have here an airplane. So just so that you'll know why it's there. Now, we have what is known as rulers. What does it mean to be a ruler of a sign? How can a planet that is a much, much smaller energetic entity than a constellation be a ruler? The words themselves are paradoxical. They make no sense. Yet, a ruler is one that rules how much energy coming from the sign it will allow through. Make sense? So it acts as an agent, really, for the energies coming from that particular sign. I didn't explain to you guys, and I'm sorry, I'll go back to that now, is the difference between a sign and a constellation. When we talk about constellations, and as I said, it's two or more stars, those are the living entities. When we talk about signs, they are the reference to the constellation, but in themselves, they're not the living, breathing entity. They are the sum total of all our thoughts, all our descriptors, everything that has come down to humanity through the ages about those constellations. Okay, so basically that's the difference as far as I see it. So here we have Mars. And if you look at the glyph, it looks like the male symbol. And therefore, there's got to be a certain kind of strength associated with it. You have that in this depiction down here, the strength Mars gives off. Mars is also known as the god of war. And in mythology, he was depicted as riding on his chariot, the god of war. There's power behind Mars. Mars, in this next glyph, I'm sorry, in this next slide, will give you other words of descriptions going along with what Mars is. I particularly like the word here, blood, okay? Red blood. And yet the planet is a red planet, right? So Mars, remember, everything is just energy. How it is used will determine if it's a positive or a negative, if it's a strength or a weakness. It's just energy, and it's strong, powerful, aggressive energy, which can be our drive, which can be the effort we put out. It can be the vitality. Our physical health can be determined also by Mars. It's the courage that can give you to overcome obstacles. It can be fearlessness, the ability to stand and for your convictions. But it can lead to violence, to aggression, to anger. Very hard to restrain the energy of Mars, and hence the passion. So now you get a sense of what Mars is like. Put it together now with the sign Aries. Aries, as you know, is forceful because it's like a fountain springing forth. It's got all this power behind it. Well, when you put Mars with that, can you see how it emboldens that Aries energy? How it's very hard to think of Aries without thinking of Mars, because they kind of go together. So we, in astrology, automatically associate the planet that rules the sign with the sign, because it's very hard to separate that in our minds. I'm doing a very fifth-rate thing here, trying to separate it to give us an understanding. But in reality, it's kind of hard to do that. Okay, so if you were putting your thinking caps on now, and if you were thinking that Aries with Mars energy just moves forward. Sometimes Aries people put their foot in their mouth because there's no time to think about anything. It's just a forward moving energy. What does Aries need more than anything else to balance it out, to make it more, to make it not as forceful, not as aggressive, not as forward? What do you all think it needs? Because if you notice here, Mars has to do with energy, with forward drive, with the part of us that's stimulated to react. What does it need? I can hear some of you thinking, and I'm sure you're all saying, it needs to use its mind. See, Aries need to use his mind. So the esoteric ruler is the mind. It is Mercury. So Aries, on the esoteric level, would use Mercury. Here's Mercury. He is the messenger of the god. He carries messages from the gods, which would be the higher levels, from the intuition, from the Buddhic level, to the mind. So you have, that's why he's always depicted with wings on his helmet or on his heels, because he can flit very quickly through the air. Mercury and the sun are known as one, because Mercury is so close to the sun. So it brings with it all that intuition. It brings with it all that brightness into the mind. And can you imagine a pioneering individual with working with Mercury and the stamina and the energy that Mars gives it, how effective an Aries person can be in the world, a fairly evolved Aries person who has the ability to be able to receive the energies of Mercury. Now, these esoteric planets, which if you did exoteric astrology, you'd never hear about this, but these esoteric planets were given to us by DK, and they will only influence those that are already on the path, because you don't have, one does not have the apparatus to receive these higher heightened energies if you are still unawakened. Make sense? Because the energies of the esoteric planets are of a higher vibration, as they need to be received by us. So in order to receive these energies, we have to be fairly advanced. And if you're in this course and if you're in this school, you're fairly advanced. Okay, so let's look at Mercury. What are some of the qualities of Mercury? See, Aries, it says, needs to use the mind. Aries people tend to go to do things first, often without thought. I didn't want to give you this. I wanted you to come up with this on your own. And I think a lot of you did. Through Mercury, they can be inventive. They can be a leader, an intelligent pioneer in any field. And Mercury has this caduceus symbol there. And what is this caduceus? It is the healer. And we see this on ambulances, and we see this in the medical system. And Mercury in mythology was known as the healer. It's the quickest system in our body, and it governs and rules the nervous system. So here you see a picture of Mercury, and there's the planet, the mind. The other thing about Mercury is Mercury was also known in mythology to be quite the trickster and bring humor. So Mercury, very versatile in its own way, and trying to show all of this in various little pics here. Hermes, the Greek appellation for Mercury. You see the word Hermes in a lot of words, hermaphrodite, and Hermes then associate, one is Greek and one is Roman, Mercury being Roman, Hermes being Greek. And here you see, whatever you see here, the caduceus, and there's the glyph of Mercury. Wonder if there's anything else to say here. Mercury deals with also our communication, our ability to write, to speak, to learn, how we learn. And anywhere in our chart where we would find Mercury, which right now has nothing to do with Aries, I'm just talking about Mercury, will show us how our mind works. It depends if it's in an earth sign, if it's in an earth sign, I am sure by now you can think that a Mercury would be one that would be like chewing your cud, right? It would be turning it over in the mind, thinking a little slower, thinking in a more practical way. If Mercury was in air, it would be quick, just like Mercury is. It would be a fast mind. Mercury was in fire. It would be a mind that's easily stimulated, like fire is, and passionate, even in the mind. And the one I have left out is the water. It would be a feeling mind. It would be what we call in our esoteric lingo, kama manas, a feeling desire mind. So what you think about, you end up feeling. What you feel immediately goes up into the mind. I know I'm giving you a lot of information here. I'm sorry. I don't want to leave anything out because I don't. That's it. Anyway, I think that's about all I want to say right now. Mercury is also known as the star of intuition because it's the messenger. It goes up and down. I kind of covered that, I think. Yeah. So just look at this slide, just to, it basically covers what we talked about. Okay. And so that's Mercury, and that is Aries. And, I think we have time to do more. So I'm going to move on to Taurus, unless someone has a burning question. And I don't see any here. Okay. Taurus. The glyph, and let me see if I can find a glyph here. There it is. It's on the hind of the bull here. Taurus is the bull. And you have this depiction here of the head of a bull with the horns. See? Just like here. Its opposite is Scorpio. There's the glyph for Scorpio. And if you think of the bull is a very solid, big, almost clumsy animal. It's an earth sign. So automatically you think of the practicality, the traditions associated with earth, bound by bound by the stability and putting your feet and getting stuck in the earth. It's on the fixed cross, fits under the fixed cross. There's a fixity to the bull. Hence, we can say, you know, stubborn as a bull. Is it easy to move a bull? No, it's not. So we can see all those terminologies having to do with the energy associated with the bull. See what else I can show you here. Yeah, there's all these different depictions of Taurus. We see hands here because of the earth quality to Taurus. Many Taurians find themselves being able to use their hands working with elements of the earth, whether it would be wood, whether it would be like molding wood and creating wonderful woodwork, working with the earth and being very, very good in the garden and planting, being very creative. There's a fourth rate quality to Taurus. And so it can be unbelievably creative, weaving and painting and being creative in the way it displays food, which again is an earth thing, right? Creating carvings or woven things is an earth thing. It's a thing. And Taurus is associated with things. The horns here at the top of the glyph almost create a vessel. And many Taurians are known to enjoy their things, to have such a strong desire nature that they love their things and they collect things. And this vessel allows one to place all these things that are collected in this vessel. Can I get that, you see? So many Taurians collectors, they just like to collect things. And it is ruled by Venus. Venus, the goddess of beauty and love. And if you love things, you tend to collect them. You tend to buy them. You tend to think of them as precious, to value them, to desire them. So there's a strong desire quality associated with Taurus. You appreciate. And hence, many Taurians have very, very, fine sensibilities, and they can distinguish quality. They can distinguish the refined things in life. Venus is an extremely evolved planet. It is known as our elder sister. And many times Venus is associated with the soul in our esoteric lingo. So, but here it's the ruler of the on the personality level. It's the exoteric ruler. So I don't really want to say soul. It tends to sometimes make one think about what is meaningful in life, because the soul is about meaning, and yet it's still the exoteric ruler. So there's a fine balance here between trying to move it into its esoteric qualities and exoteric, depending on how evolved someone is, will depend on how Venus is appropriated. Are the more refined soul-like qualities appropriated of Venus, even though it's the exoteric ruler? Or is it strictly on the exoteric physical plane, where it's all about things? Venus also rules the Ajna center, being some people call it the third eye, right here on the forehead. And it is said, when thine eye be open, all is illuminated. So Taurus is the only sign in the entire zodiac that is associated with illumination. And Venus plays a huge, huge part to that. It illumines. And it is through the Ajna being the focus lens, that one can focus that lens and be able to see clearly, to be able to see and to receive from up high, and to be able to focus it out into the world. Because the Ajna does coordinate and integrate the entire personality. Venus's energies are second ray as a personality and fifth ray as a soul. And that fifth ray, and you put that into the Ajna, what a sharp, beautiful mind one can have. So that is, let me see, I have more here on Venus. Yeah. So Venus in Taurus is about what we love, what we are attracted to. It's also about our romance. And as I said, refined taste, beauty, aesthetic values, what we appreciate. It tends to harmonize, to blend, gives one talent, grace, elegance, charm. Venus is very, very charming. Beauty, goodness, intelligence, wisely and lovingly applied. Always, all these characteristics that are of a higher quality will depend on the receiver, the one that receives it. How refined are they? How evolved are they? How much soul is influencing in the life? All of that will depend on how we use any of these energies. So we're going to move on to the esoteric ruler of Taurus. And this is one that you cannot guess unless you know. We're going to go to Vulcan. Vulcan. Vulcan is known as the blacksmith of the gods. Hephaestus is another name known in Greek mythology. This depiction of Vulcan makes him look really cool. You know, nice physique, working as a smithman. But in mythology, he was known as being hunchback, ugly. And you know who he ended up taking as his bride? He took Venus. He took Venus. Here you have the Beauty and the Beast. This is where you get all the stories about Beauty and the Beast. He was very much beastly looking, but his talents and his ability are unbelievable. Vulcan, first of all, Vulcan carries with it first ray energy and known as the hammer of the gods. So he, with his anvil there, he works away at the metal, refining it, burnishing it, making it really, really beautiful. He was known to work with all the tools that were used in war, like the shields. Maybe he worked with helmets, and he certainly, you know, worked with spears and whatever. He refined metal. And if we look at what all that means, is that he works with one's spiritual will. First ray energy. So it's the will to change one's passion, which Taurus is very much into passion and desire, into compassion. It becomes the will to change the greed that is also associated with Taurus many times, wanting to have, to wanting to satiate all those desires. And moving the greed into a sense of need. It is also the will to become steadfast and steady. In other words, it helps one work with the soul, getting to know the soul, getting to refine the higher aspects of one's energy. Let me see if I have another. Yeah, I've got some more information here for you. Uses pressure and heat, intensity and endurance. So Vulcan is so close to the sun that we don't actually see the planet with our own eyes. We are told that scientists can actually sense the magnetic field of Vulcan, that there is some kind of a magnetic energy there, but they don't see it. So you can imagine how powerful that energy is. Mercury, which would be the next one over, we are said Mercury and the Sun are one. Where is Vulcan? Vulcan is between Mercury and the Sun. So it's even closer to the Sun. So the amount of intensity and heat and power associated with Vulcan is tremendous. And in our charts, it's always only up to 8 degrees of either side of the sun. And why we cannot pinpoint where it is because nobody knows exactly where it is. We just know we can sense a magnetic field around it. So when we are moved by Vulcan, as Vulcan transits and moves us, we start to feel a little uncomfortable. It's like taking the metal. You see, the metal that has been honed and worked. When a blacksmith works with that, he moves it and puts it into the fire to heat it up so that he can shape it and he can form it. Then he has to cool it off and put it into the water. And then you get all the steam coming up. So it can create a tremendous, a time when, you know, you're very let's boil it down to crisis, where tremendous amount of energy and you feel really strong feelings, and then you cry and whatever it is, it's a time that it can really, really shake you up, because it's time for you to change. It's time to reveal the soul within the form. It destroys those attachments that we have to the form, because Taurus is so much associated with form. It's earth, it's form. I hope that kind of clears that up. Any questions so far on that? Any questions?
I don't see any.
I'll give them a moment. And I'm just looking at the time, and I think we can still do the third one, even though I spent a lot of time on the intro. I think we can get the third one done.
Yeah, I think we can.
Okay. No questions? Oh, people, I'm so glad you get this.
Yeah, crystal clear as mud. Natalie wants to know where Vulcan is in the chart.
Uh-huh. Well, you see, that's a good question. We really don't know. We just know it's within 8 degrees on either side of the sun. So when there are transits and it's moving towards our sun, it might be hitting Vulcan. The astrology charts that are solar fire, they tend to put Vulcan in there. But we have been told by people that know a hell of a lot more than I do that we really shouldn't put it in there, because we really don't know where it is. So we don't. It's that simple. We really don't know. We just know that it's on either side of the sun within 8 degrees.
Yeah, but that actually helps us a lot, because a lot of people, you know, if their sun is between 9 degrees and 21 degrees, they can say for sure what the sign is. They may not be able to tell what the house is. I know I do actually use Vulcan in my solar fire charts, but I always put a little caveat in there that we don't know for sure, and we're guessing. And if it's possible to be in two different signs or two different houses, I would usually put a little caveat in there too. So it gives people an idea, because many times, you know, you can actually get the sign if you can't get the degree.
Right. So if you have a sun sign that's 28 degrees, you could have Vulcan either in the same sign as your sun or the one next to it, because it's close to the end of that, the degrees of that particular sign. But if you're smack in the middle, you can move on 8 degrees on either side, then you know that Vulcan is in that particular sign. Does that make sense? Okay. We're going to move on to Gemini. So I did cover with you guys the Ray 4 for Taurus and the Ray 1 for Vulcan and 2 and 5 for Venus. Okay, so this is an air sign. It's an interesting thing. If you study the zodiac, or if you study the entire chart, you will see you start with fire, then you go to earth, then you go to air, then you go to water, and the same rotation repeats itself. It repeats itself again and again. So we've covered fire, we've covered earth, and now we go to air. And as I mentioned, air, the air signs do not have animals. They have generally speaking, humans. Gemini is known as an air sign that's in the mutable cross. So it's very, very flexible, very versatile. And it's known as the sign of duality, two-ness. Some books refer to them as being opposites of male-female. Some books refer to them as being twins, two male twins. Suffice it to know that it is about two, that there are two there. And the ray governing Gemini is also two. Numbers are very important in all this esoteric work. Numbers give us resonances, which means that their vibration is similar. Number tells us a lot about the energy. Ray two is love, wisdom. So the opposite here, down here, is the Centaur, which is Sagittarius, both of them being on the mutable cross. And if you look very, very carefully, you see here something that's a dead giveaway over here. By now, this individual has wings on his feet. That would be, yes, Mercury. Very good. So Gemini is ruled by Mercury. Here's just some more depictions of the Gemini. Gemini flits. It's air, flits like a butterfly. Can go from one to the other, to the other, to the other, like a social butterfly. That's where you get the social butterfly. Gemini could be so much into the clouds, the air, that, it can be a little bit, what's some of the words that we use? I don't even know how to, they're not coming to my mind right now. Airhead, a spacey, those kinds of words are associated oftentimes with Gemini. Because Gemini, ruled by Mercury, and remember, Mercury is the fastest, it governs the fastest system within us, like the nervous system. Many Geminians haven't got the ability to stabilize themselves because this is mutable. It's versatile. It's changeable, and it's air, so it can flit around just like this butterfly. And what they need more than anything is the ability to stabilize. Because it is ruled by Mercury, there's something to do, and it's the third sign, which generally governs our communication too. This is the sign of how we communicate, how we relate, how we do something with another. Now, why do we have the monkey here? The monkey is, if those of you who are old like me would remember Tarzan, and Cheetah was the name of the monkey. Well, in Sanskrit, Cheetah is the stuff that goes on in the mind stuff, constant movement in the mind. Have any of you noticed how the mind doesn't stop? How the mind is constantly going on and on and on and on. Even when you meditate, the mind will say, oh, I'm sitting so quietly right now. There are no thoughts. Well, that in itself is a thought. So the mind is constantly going on and on and on. And what we need to do as we meditate is learn to quiet the mind, to really, really steady that mind so that we can be in the light. And that, hence, it's called chitta. Let's move on. Mercury. Well, we've already covered the qualities of Mercury, and this is just the same pictures as we had before. It governs communication. It governs the way we speak, the way we learn, how we communicate, the words we use, the way our thought forms are put together. And in Gemini, there's that quixosity. It's quick. So let's just see what else I have here. That just shows you twins. In this particular depiction, it's a girl and it's female and male. It's showing that the scholarliness, the learning, the books associated with Gemini. It's esoteric ruler, and that's what this is. Its esoteric ruler is Venus. There you have Venus. And Venus, as you remember, is the goddess of love and beauty. Now, what would that look like if you put Venus together with Gemini? We know that Gemini has a lot to do with, ruled by Mercury, it has a lot to do with the thinking processes and the mind. Well, if you put Venus in there, what would that look like? Now, all these words here, we said about Venus. So here's where I'm asking you all to really use your thinking. What would that be like if we put Venus together with Gemini in the mind? Because it's very much associated with the mind. Well, we know that Venus has a lot to do with refinement, with beauty, with aestheticness, with grace. So if you can put all of that together, Gemini, Mercury, and Venus, you can have a mind that has such ability to express itself so beautifully. It can be in oral communication. It could be in the written word. It can be a very refined mind. It's just beautiful what Venus together with Mercury in Gemini can look like. Again, you have to be a fairly evolved person to be able to use and hone those abilities, because the esoteric rulers will only influence you if you have the apparatus, the vibration, high enough to be able to receive those energies. I think we're just about done here, unless we can open up the floor here to explore more of this, to explore, to ask questions, because really the rest has to be stimulated within one's own mind, everything that has been said thus far. So I'm opening the floor up. If you have comments, questions, you want me to explore something a little bit more, this is the time. You can ask either BL or myself.
Okay, Diana has a question. Go ahead, Diana.
Hi, I've read some material that talks about the moon veiling a certain planet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Could you speak to that, either any of you or either of you?
We have not hit yet a sign where the moon veils a planet. When we talk about Virgo, we will get to that. But all that that really means is that it stands in front of a possibility of other planets. And DK gives us what those possibilities might be. It could be Vulcan, it could be Neptune, it could even be Uranus. So depending on which sign we're looking at and depending on where someone is at and their point of evolution will depend on which planet might influence them, affect them. So all that a veil is, it covers something up. When a bride gets married and she's got a veil on her tiara and the veil covers the face, you cannot see clearly what's behind the veil. Well, likewise, a veiling sign here, or something that veils a planet, you don't know which planet is exactly behind that veil. That's all it really means. But then we have to start to think, which one of the three could it possibly be? Without knowing where someone is at on their path of evolution, it's very hard to figure it out. Sometimes a person might have a fairly good idea if they're a probationer or if they're a disciple. Then we have better clues to try to understand which planet it might be. Does that help?
Yes. And what? Why do only certain signs have that and other signs don't?
Oh, I wish I could ask DK personally. I really do. I don't know. This is what we've been given, so that's what we go with. I really don't know the answer to that. Any thoughts, BL?
Yeah, I think it has more to do with the planetary rulers per se than the sign itself, because the typical planets that are veiled are the sun and the moon. So it would involve Cancer, Leo,
Virgo,
and possibly, you know, the other ones with
Aquarius, maybe. I think it's got the moon there.
Yeah. So,
and
so that's what it has more to do with the planets themselves, because the moon and the sun are not sacred, as you mentioned earlier, and the veiling planets are in fact sacred. So that also plays into it. There's a lot that gets into it, and DK can in fact be a little cryptic about it.
The other thing that not to go away from this, so let me go back. Has this helped? That's all I wanted on that subject.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so the other thing worth mentioning about astrology, it's a third ray science, and the third ray is the ray of complexity, of the ray of muchness, the ray of abstract. So there's so much to astrology in so many different areas. It can get and can be very overwhelming. There are certain things that I would encourage everyone to memorize, and that would be the 12 signs, what they are, the order of which they in which they are, their ruling planets. I spent hours and hours and hours. My brain was so thick, I could not learn this for the life of me. I kept having to work on this and work on this, and eventually I learned it. So for those of you who are struggling with this, it's so natural, but this is the part that is memory. You learn the qualities and the characteristics associated with the sign, with the planets, and then we go into the fun part. And the fun part is, once you have the basic understanding, we start putting it all together. We start to see what goes with what. What does that mean? Because everything is relationships. Everything is how we relate. This relates to this, and this relates to that. We start to see things, and this is where it's fun. Actually, it really is. But without understanding the basics, it makes it harder. So for those of you who are new to this, just plug away at it. It's really worth it, and remember, you take everything with you into your next incarnation, so it's never a waste of time.
I don't see any other questions.
Oops. No, I don't want to go there. So the aim is, we will try to get as much done as we can before the conference. The conference is, it's early May, is it not?
Yes, it's 24 April to 6 May.
Okay, so end of April, beginning of May. So we'll try to get as much done as we can in the next three sessions. And then hopefully we can get you guys involved as well. I hope this was helpful.
I would like to put in a plug for that conference. For those of you who haven't heard of it, it's a seven-ring conference that they have annually in Chandler, Arizona. And this year it's on Ray 2, and the title of the conference is Buddha and Christ, Radiant Wisdom, All-Pervading Love. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't see any other comments or questions, so thank you very much, Eva.
Well, thank you, everybody. I certainly appreciate you attending, and I hope that what we've offered helps. That's the purpose behind it. And as was said, this is being recorded, It will be available, and we will do that with all the presentations. Okay. So, sayonara. Thank you all. And whatever it is, good night, good morning,
good night,
whatever it is for
morning,
you.
Wherever. Thank you all.
Yes. Thank you.